What era, what time frame are we
it
in
was,
now?
This was like about
70s?
Late 60s and early 70s.
Okay. All right.
And dance your ass off, discotheque, they playing records, no band.
And just record, no mixing yet. This is just records.
They're, record. Well, the guy had something hanging from the ceiling so the vibration wouldn't screw up. And their light show was two projectors going to the stage. And some guy has got plastic colored things spray on him, and then they're running down on the stage.
They're visual effects.
So we call it, what is this? It's called disco.
Mm. We're 70s now.
Yeah. And
disco,
then
disco era
I came back,
born.
I still wasn't sold on it that much until they opened the Studio 54 in New York.
Studio 54.
So we thought disco was a good name. What do we call it? There was a movie called 2001 Space Odyssey.
That's right.
And we took the pictures of the 2001 Space Odyssey, painted the entire place like a spaceship, and black lights in the center.
Yeah.
So when you turn the black lights on,
everything glows.
This is like it.
Yes.
And then we opened that. I was working on it on the floor myself. I didn't have enough money to do all these big things. And after
you laid
I finished
the floor.
Doing the job, I laid the floor. So this is a good part of it because my students, they own the Hanno San Jose hardware. And they also own the, when they make all the hardwood floors.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave them dance lessons for free. They gave me the hardwood floor.
Wow.
And then I said, how am I going to lay this stupid thing? So they sent one of those technicians who got it started from the center.
Yes.
They put the lines.
Yeah.
And then you put the, once he started, he says, well, you go and finish it. He taught me how to do it.
Yeah.
I was on my knees for 5 months.
Wow.
I go teach dancing, come back, do the hardwood floor. Anyways. So this whole thing, by the time it finished, I was so tired. I thought, I'll go home, shower, clean up, and come. And then I went home, I fell asleep.
For the grand
opening. And then they opened the place. Everything, in those days, you didn't have an iPhone to call.
Right.
And I got up, I said, I can't do it. I just got in my car. I said, I'll drive. I came to Notre Dame, and I parked my car. There is a line going forever. And the cops are in there. The one police officer came, parked my side, came, knocked on it, and I turned the window down. What are you doing in here? Don't you know you can't park in here? I said, sir, see that? It's mine.
Oh,
I'm so tired. I went home.
I fell asleep. Oh,
what
man.
What am I going to do?
Yeah.
Roll the window, I'm going to sleep.
Yeah.
So I did that, and I went to sleep.
Wow.
And then when the whole thing was finished, everything left, and I went inside.
Mm-hmm.
Disco Odyssey.
Disco Odyssey.
That's what we called it.
Wow.
And the beautiful part of it was when the ABC gave me the liquor license for alcohol, they didn't think that I would bring minors on the other side.
Mm.
But legally, I was already had it.
Yeah.
So nobody could say anything. My police officers and the matron, they liked me a lot. They did. And they said, don't worry about it, we'll take care of it. And so the minors went through a different door.
Mm-hmm.
Adults came in and entered through a different door. So they could be checked the IDs and so on. And then there were openings going to the dance floor, which a security will be there.
Yeah.
So the police department pretty much set that up for me.
Nice.
And later on, they told me that two officers isn't enough because you got 2,000 people in there.
Yeah.
So then we had
Disco
more.
Odyssey, 2,000 people, downtown San Jose.
And the whole nine yards. And it was a magic. Then, of course, we did other things. I'll let you know. I think when you came in, what was the name of the place when you came in?
It was Tropicana. There was no, I missed the Studio 47 days. I moved to the Bay Area in 1994. And I missed that whole era. But I heard a lot of stories. And when I moved to the Bay Area, I had moved to San Francisco, and I was working with Britt Hahn at the time. And Britt owned City Nights, owned a bunch of the nightclubs. He was the godfather of San Francisco.
Everybody knew Britt Hahn.
There was Dr. Winky, who owned DV8. And I got my opportunity up there, and I remember hearing the stories. Now, when I moved to San Francisco, I used to come to San Jose because I liked San Jose. San Jose reminded me of Los Angeles. And I remember going into Paradise Beach. There was still Paradise Beach at the time. It was right at the tail end. I had missed the D.B. Cooper era, but Paradise Beach, there was the one that Yasik, there was another operator out here, Yasik.
Yeah.
He had the one on, is it St. John or St. James Street? It was Oasis.
Yeah.
I went to the Oasis a couple of times, but never went to Tropicana, and Studio 47 didn't exist at that time. And then what other clubs were out there at the time? I saw the one that they tried to build, Dimension. I had heard about that, but yeah, no, it was a different time when I arrived, but all I heard was stories, and they're like, you have to work with Harry, and if you don't work with Harry, you're not going to make it, because he is so gangster, he is the godfather, and you need to ask permission. And I learned that from another gentleman who allowed me to do promotions with him up, Nodder was his name, in San Francisco. And I said, I just love San Jose. He goes, you're not going to be able to touch San Jose. He goes, because Harry Evans controls everything. And I was like, who is this Harry Evans guy? And I need to meet this Harry Evans, because I know people too. And I know people too. And this Harry Evans is going to know who I am now. So felt like a part in the movie Carlito's Way, right? You got Carlito, you got the main guy, and then you got Benny from the Bronx, right, who's trying to come up. And I used that at that time. I was exposed to a lot of those types of movies. But when I moved up here, I saw a lot of great opportunity, because like you, Harry, you saw an opportunity. You had that edge. You were in the dance. You had cinema behind you. You had the experience. And when I moved from Los Angeles to San Francisco, I had that. I had the edge and I had the dream. I wanted more. I knew that I wanted more in life than what I had at the time, especially coming from a broken family, a single mom, younger sister. I mean, it was pretty disastrous during that time, but my dream and my will to work just was just growing. I just needed guidance, leadership. I needed opportunity. And yeah, when I got accepted both into San Francisco State and San Jose State, I chose San Jose because it reminded me of Los Angeles.
Yeah, when you came, there was a lot happening.
Oh, yeah.
See, what happened
was... Yeah, no, there was a lot happening.
Yeah, what happened was, just so I'll get to it.
Yeah.
When we went to the Disco Odyssey, then what I did that nobody else had done, I brought artists that there was the Hot 97.7. It was a new kind of a music.
Yeah, you're going into the 80s now, right? Yeah. So if we're done with the Disco Odyssey, because what was the biggest groups that you brought disco?
Well,
to disco
I opened
Odyssey?
It up first with Stevie B.
Got it. Oh, so now we're going in, that's 80s now.
Yeah.
So we're done with Disco Odyssey. How long did that era last, that disco era
for you?
Well,
the Disco Odyssey was, I'll tell you why we had two names.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
The name of the Disco Odyssey was because the radio station, Hot 97.7, would do the dance. They would advertise themselves.
Got it.
And help me to get the artist.
All right.
So through the studio, I got the Stevie B, CoverGirl, Sweet Sensation, even Apollonia that did the movie with Purple Rain, Prince.
Purple Rain.
I mean, yeah, we had all of those. So when you said Godfather and so on and so forth, the Godfatherhood actually started me and the radio station together.
Yes.
And then I used to do the dances when I had all the...
American Bandstand. There you go.
All right. Soul Train, they used to call it. They used to do the Soul Train and American Bandstand. So I had the entire place done that way. So you would come on Saturday night and dance. We make the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then we will broadcast it the next day on Channel 36.
All right.
So all the kids in the area are watching themselves on the TV the next day.
Dance TV.
And
it might have been created here for the Bay Area, yes.
So we had our own thing. So I have now the TV station. Wow. I have the radio station.
Yeah.
And I have all the talents coming from New York.
Yeah.
So that's what they used to say, Godfather, because no one else could do this.
That's right.
And then the TV section of it, which I set it up.
Yeah.
And then I would also go make my own commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And from all the pieces,
I love this
of
story. I know where we're going with these.
All the things that I have taken already, yeah. I would chop them and make it edited, make it something nice for the TV. And I had an announcer that he was a student from San Jose State.
Yes.
One day he decided he's not going to show up at the last minute.
Okay.
Oh, this is cute.
All right.
And then so everybody's running around. Who's going to open up? Who's going to open up? I'm going to open up. You? Can't even speak English very well.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to open up. Give me a shirt, change the shirt, suit, huh? From the Studio 47. No, actually, it started with, my name is Harry Evans. From the Studio 47, located at 47 Notre Dame Avenue in downtown
it.
San Jose. We bring it to you live,
yes.
On location.
Yes.
Disco Odyssey, Disco Showcase. Nitronique at the DJ booth. What do you have in new music for our dancers? It will go there.
There you go.
And this puppy at home, he must have been crying.
Oh.
Because he thought we're going to sell it.
Yeah.
With my accent.
Yeah.
I called myself Harry Evans.
Oh, I love
that
it.
That was the funniest thing. And of course, after it was finished, I went straight to the bathroom.
Oh, my God.
But because I had
And is that the introduction of Studio 47?
Yeah.
And you came up, I mean, you're like in a big studio, right? It's a big ballroom.
Big ballroom.
And it's a Disco Odyssey, 47 Genius. It's the address, 47. Wow.
Was it? Yeah, it was it. See, when you came in, something happened to me. After the disco became so famous, one gentleman came in on a Saturday night. He said, Harry, what do you do here on Sunday? What do I do here? It's closed. I'm at home. Swimming pool.
And Studio 47 was happening, but you had another.
That's before you got there.
What about Regina's? Because I heard.
No, that's afterwards.
Okay.
That's
all right.
Afterwards.
Okay. Gotcha.
So then I said, Sunday? I mean, who's going to go out dancing Sundays? He said, well, we do dances, Latin dances.
Yes.
And we call it tardeada.
Uh-huh.
Tardeada, what's that? Sunday afternoon after church, they go out dancing.
Yeah.
And then we bring big bands from Mexico.
Yeah.
And then we'll do it in here. I said, who wants to work on Sundays?
Right.
He says, people are not going to come. Well, how much do you want? Rent the hall. I said, well, $2,000? Said, okay, $2,000. They brought a band called La Sonora Santanera.
Mm-hmm.
Carlito Colorado, one of the biggest bands from Mexico. And I have just enough workers in there. I thought, well, 150 people will show up. Surprise. The place was wall-to-wall packed,
wow.
3 o'clock. At that time, they are doing live on the Mexican radio station, band playing, because you could see anything, but you could hear the music. I thought, whoa-wee, Sunday I make more money than I make on Friday.
Friday and Saturday?
Saturday.
Wow.
So that is when you came in,
yeah.
That I already had all three set up.
Got it.
Disco on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday was the Latin dances.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of different things going on at that time, because when I came, you had already done some transformation for the space. When in the 1994-95 time frame, the big club, the big teen club that was happening in San Jose was Hollywood Junction. So we've already skipped a lot of stuff. So I want to take us back to Studio 47. Studio 47 was... It is to this day, 40 years later, Harry?
Yeah.
40 years later, to this day, there's still people that do a Studio 47 party.
Yeah.
And to this day, freestyle, old school is still a big part of the South Bay and more of the San Jose area. Let's touch on some of the groups. Stevie B., big player in the 80s, the Cover Girls. You had
Sweet Sensation.
Sweet Sensation, Apollonia. You had the Jets.
Everybody. I even have a young MC. Yeah. I had some rap groups. Well, those were nice. Yeah. Those was nice one. And Sir Mix-a-Lot.
You had a nice rap group.
Yeah, no, they were because the music, what they had.
It was party music.
It was, yeah it was fun.
Tone Loke.
Tone Loke.
Performed for you.
Every one of those area rap artists were there. Yeah. Only one of those came in. And this is why, because the young generation knew the music.
Yeah.
And the other people, now when you look at it, those guys, they were 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
They are now. The one doing all these dances, the DJs and so on.
Yeah.
That's what they talk about, Studio 47.
Yeah.
And that's when we used to have the people dancing on Saturday and then see themselves on TV on Sunday.
Yeah.
I was unique.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody ever gone that far.
That's right.
What got Downtown San Jose going, it wasn't really me. It was Mayor Hammer, Susan Hammer, who called all of us in there and said that we want to make...
Was she the
first woman mayor? And she wanted the Downtown San Jose to be like San Francisco.
Wow. Visionary. And, I love that.
Yeah.
Was she a good mayor? Do you believe that she was in her vision and her innovation?
Well, the way she approached everything, she wanted the San Jose not to be a small town.
Got it. Big thinker now. Okay.
Big thinker now.
I like her.
And her idea was to get on the ground floor and some of the good restaurants like AP Stomps.
Mm.
It's the first place in San Jose you could go eat a caviar.
Yeah.
Who'd ever heard of a caviar, beluga caviar at that?
Yeah.
And then beautiful wine. And their chef was excellent. And they would make any food you want. So all the attorneys and high class would eat over there. Yeah. Then D.B. Cooper's, where Chuck Oliver opened it up. D.B. Cooper stole the money and jumped out of the airplane.
They never found
the money.
And that was during the Studio 47 times.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there was because I want to really touch on this because it's important, because we're changing the narrative right now of San Jose, downtown San Jose, Silicon Valley. Downtown San Jose right now has an opportunity post-pandemic to become an innovator, a leader in the entertainment part of the Bay Area, because with everything that has happened in the last 4 years, San Francisco took a big hit. Oakland is trying to revive their scene. And San Jose, out of the Bay Area cities, it is the largest city out of the Bay Area, and we are the third largest city in California. We are home to Facebook, Google, Instagram, Adobe Downtown, Zoom. Zoom, what kept the world together, was the glue that kept us together during the pandemic. It is the home, and you have so many other high-tech companies that are looking to San Jose. We just had a large conference in San Jose that drawed over 20,000 people, NVIDIA. The next wave of technology is the AI technology. So San Jose right now has the opportunity to become a leader. It's not going to be Vegas, but it has the opportunity to be a leader and bring in quality entertainment, quality restaurants. Something that I know that you fought for a very long time and I witnessed it in my early career with you when I started working with you in 1996-97. And going back to that time, and we're going to, I really want to put an emphasis on that, because people need to really understand that San Jose has had its waves of success in the entertainment. It's been a rival to San Francisco. San Francisco is cool, and it's a different version. But if you really want to have fun, you come to San Jose, because San Jose, you have beautiful women, you have beautiful weather. San Francisco, it's cold, even though you have beautiful people there. The climate, the energy, the environment, it's more of a destination city than San Jose, when we have a million, now we have over a million people here in San Jose, so the population is here. But we had this era where, and again, I'm going back and on the things that I learned, you had the D.B. Cooper eras, which seems to have dominated in the 80s, and you had Studio 47, you had Paradise Beach, you had Oasis, so you had this golden triangle of nightclubs that were catering. You had Effects. There was another one called Effects in the South Bay. So the South Bay has always had vibrancy, and it had innovation even in the nightlife. And I think it's very important that people out there understand that San Jose has always had the kind of energy that it's going through right now. Then we have the Studio 47 transition. You have then Club Miami. You have Vertigo. You have Tropicana, which then you kind of pivot. At least this is what I'm seeing as you have different things that are going on, different nightclubs that you're involved in. There's in the Latino market, there's Club Caribe. There was actually, and if I want to even go further back, the original Tropicana was not in downtown. The original Tropicana was in the east side San Jose.
It was inside San Jose.
In the Tropicana
Story
Shopping
Center.
Yeah,
Tropicana
Story and King.
Shopping Center.
Story and King, for those of you that don't know, is actually the birthplace of cruising. Cruising started on Story and King. Lowrider magazine started in the Bay Area. There's a lot of culture and history that has been, I don't want to say missed, it's just we need to remind people that we are in a mecca of entertainment, excitement. We've done things as well. We're not just taking things from Los Angeles or from New York or from other places. That we have also created our own presence.
Well,
and freestyle high energy, this is the mecca of the world.
Absolutely.
We cannot kill that music. It just keeps coming back.
In fact, so, when you look at it, what I saw, the diversity.
Yes.
Because like even when I used to have all of the Latin dancers,
yes.
Remember, I used to own in Campbell.
Yes.
And the Terrace.
Yes.
Which was one of the biggest clubs in Campbell. That one had like a country music one side, disco music in one side, and listening music for romantic on one side. And then when the male dancers came into it, we used to have a fox hunt for men, fox hunt for women. And that was diversity. All of the clubs were successful.
Yes.
And even when you talked about
the
Starlight
Ballroom.
We're
talking about the 80s right now, yes.
And then Tropicana was in Starlight Ballroom. But yeah. I put it in Story and King because I did a different music in here.
Yes.
In San Jose.
Yeah.
Then Paradise Beach is the one when I started first.
You actually had a volleyball. I never got to witness it. Now, but you had a volleyball court inside. This is how innovative Harry and how amazed I am and where I got a lot of freedom. You gave me the freedom to be creative. You never stifled my creativity. And I share that with the world. I tell them, one, I was mentored by the best. Two, in that mentorship, I said I had the ability because I don't want to say I had an open checkbook, but I had someone that believed in me, that invested in me, and gave me the freedom to do the color flyers, the die-cut flyers, fuck any band that I wanted. Are you sure, Mauricio? Yes. We made a lot of money, and we also lost money. And it wasn't always the good times. It was bad times. But
that's what business is.
Absolutely.
Business. But one thing that, Mauricio, you don't give yourself a credit for that you should, and I tell you why. I'm saying as an outsider. United States being as a young country, why would you ask yourself, why are we ahead of France, Italy, Germany? They've been there for 3,000 years. Why does Google starts in this country? They didn't start from there. Why did all these other industries in the United States in this area?
Yeah.
Because the freedom of wanting to be what you want to be. When I opened my first dance studio and the Starlight Ballroom, I went to the bank and asked them for money. And they said, what are you going to do? I said, this is what I'm going to do. They came and looked at my operation. The manager said, yeah, we can invest $20,000 with you. This town has that ability of giving you to get your mind to go where you want it to go.
Yes.
That freedom,
yes.
You took advantage of it,
yes.
And made yourself who you are. You got to give yourself a credit.
Yes.
And this is what this country is about.
Well, thank you for saying that. And yes, I believed without knowing that I was in the mecca of global thinking, of thinking. The spirit of entrepreneurship is here.
Here.
Silicon Valley.
Absolutely.
Apple computers,
everything.
Apple
everything.
iPhones, everything that we are touching today has started from Silicon Valley.
From this area.
Yes, from this area. And part of what I've been doing now is I've gotten into the places, I've gotten into the rooms that we were once I don't want to say not allowed, but we were not in those circles, the circles of influence that now I am exposed to. I'm able to share the stories that you shared to me growing up and in my young career. I share them now with people that are listening. Before they were not listening. Now they're listening, and there's a reason why they have to listen, because it's not a choice anymore. In order to get this machine going again post-pandemic, we have to think outside the box.
Absolutely.
And we have to think outside the box with what restaurants we're going to bring, with what entertainment we're going to bring, with what types of high-rises we're going to build. I mean, the circle of people that I'm working with right now are not investing hundreds of millions. They're investing billions with a B. And with that said, to be in that room and be able to share the experiences that I went through and that I learned and the mentorship and the knowledge. I tell people, I clean them up, but I tell them, see these grays right here? This is wisdom. You see these grays right here? This is wisdom. And I learned this from my mentor.
Experience. That's what it means.
But I acknowledge it, yes. So I look at where we're at today, and I see lots of opportunities to repeat. And I'm going to go back. The 80s were a great era for San Jose. In that, and just like everything, nothing is forever. Eras end. Good eras end, and then we go through a transition. And the 80s, all of a sudden, from what I hear, is there's a transformation. Once things have to change, the clientele changes. There's a evolution of music, of people, trends. And it seems that, like, between the late 80s and early 90s, I mean, well, we had the dot-com came in and really took things to a whole different, because the 90s, we skipped the 90s. In the 90s, there was a lot of different transitions as well. In the 90s, I don't know what the nightclubs were in the South Bay other than what we had created, which was Tropicana. We had Vertigos, which turned to Club Wild. We had the Blue Tattoo. We had Planet X, that great operators, Albert Campoy and his crew. I don't know what era the Oz was. That was another nightclub, the Oz. There was so much vibrancy. But to me, the 90s was blurred. So if you can help me in the 90s, or we can skip right through them. But what really happened in the 90s? Because when my first event with you, and it's similar when I hear the stories that you share, I remember I came with this crazy idea. Actually, I have to, if you don't know, I'm going to remind you how we first connected. So I got involved because my friend Mondo, who worked for Yasik, broke off and was doing his own stuff. And where San Pedro Square is at today, there used to be a restaurant called Hamburger Mary's.
Absolutely.
And Hamburger Mary's reminded me of Los Angeles, of one of the nightclubs in Los Angeles that we used to promote, where for me, Harry, I grew up in a generation and an era where there is no color lines. People didn't, at least the young kids didn't care, because we saw enough discrimination. We had the blacks on one area, the Latinos in one area, the Asians in one area, and the whites in one area, and it was... And through music, at least the music I was listening to and the stations, the radio station that I was listening to, there was no color lines. They started embedding that in our minds. Say no to drugs, no, love everybody. So I used to go to the clubs in West Hollywood and in downtown LA where gay kids, straight kids, drag queens, blacks, whites, Latinos, Asians, everybody was just, it was like a melting pot. When I came to the Bay Area, I saw San Francisco was too elitist for me as far as in the nightclub scene. And then San Jose was just fun.
Well, yeah.
San Jose was just fun.
Yes.
In San Francisco, you had your silos. You had the Castro District, which was for the gay community, right? And there was no different versions. It was just gay. You had certain areas of San Francisco where it was the elite. And then you had these little small, you had the area North Beach, the Italian area, where most of the strip clubs and a few of the other clubs were there. So you had these little pockets. But when you came to San Jose, at least when I experienced San Jose, and I've heard some horror stories about San Jose, about the theaters and prostitutions and all the different stuff that used to happen on North First Street and all that. But I never experienced it, so it's irrelevant to me. But when I experienced San Jose in my time, I had a lot of fun. And the people that were running it knew what the heck they were doing because they made it fun. Now, I saw there was an opportunity because there was no club 18 and over at the time because I was thinking 18 and over. I was still young when I was up here. And I said, Hamburger Mary's, I got an opportunity. The owner said, I have a night available. I have Sundays available. And I'm thinking, like, I'll take it. And he's like, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to do this party called Groovy Sundays. And he goes, okay. And I was teamed up with a promoter. And we started doing Groovy Sundays. And it was gay kids, straight kids, drag queens, everybody, house music. We were doing it. And it was getting packed. And then Mondo said, oh, man, he goes, we're getting, people are getting our attention. I said, what are you talking about? I'm like, nah, whatever. I'm going to keep moving forward. Then I said, oh, no, I saw the taste of it. I was making so much money on Sunday. And I said, hey, let's start another night, Mondo. He goes, what night do you want to do? I said, well, shit, we can't get Friday or Saturday. Let's get Thursday. So on Thursday night, I started the first 18 and over salsa night. And I called it Club Havana. And I remember then all of a sudden, we started doing this 18 and over night. And we didn't know the rules that you had. They were established. At the time, I never had met you. I didn't know the operation part of it. And we broke all the rules. We said 18 and over, you get a wristband and you get to go walk around with everybody. And hey, you're the 21 and over boyfriend that's got the 19-year-old or 20-year-old girlfriend that's holding hands. He buys two drinks. Wait, we don't know. All of a sudden, you know what happens there, right? And I remember that we get somebody called on the club because our Thursday nights, we had a line around the block. We were right down the street from Club Miami that you own. And we were going, now I thought it was in competition because, and then we had Vertigo at the time right across the street. Ed Pope was a partner and he worked. He was another operator that I got to work with closely. But I realized that now I feel like I'm stepping on some people's toes here because we're making some money and we're drawing crowds. So I remember the following week after our grand opening of Club Havana, and we had already been doing the Sunday for a long time. But the Thursday night really brought some attention to us. And the chief of police called the owners of the Hamburger Mary and says, hey, we need to talk. You can't be mixing the 18 and over with the 21 and over. And we're like, but we've been doing this for so long that, like, we don't care. It's not permitted for that. And we thought, because, again, we didn't know what the regulations were. 18 and over is a 47 license, which allows you to have exactly, all ages. Exactly. But at that time, I didn't know.
The separation wasn't there.
And then once you put entertainment,
exactly,
then it changed the regulations, the ordinances. So, and in San Francisco, we didn't have that problem because City Nights was doing mixtures.
Yeah, well, they're loose over there.
Yeah, the Palladium was getting away with it in San Francisco. So we thought, hey, let's do this and we'll be the first. And because we were the first of its kind and different, and we did it on nights that were not common nights, we exploded and had a lot of good time. But I heard the rumors, right? Here's the rumor mill starts. He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, Harry or one of his managers, whether either it was Pierre or Rudy at the time. I had no idea who these people were, but they called the police. And I was like, what? Who called the police? That was what was happening. And I said, no. Then I remember I'm like, I need to find out who this Harry person is. And I threw that out to the universe crazy. You had a DJ at the time that used to work for you, Greg Lopez. And he used to do, at the time, Hollywood Junctions was happening. And when Hollywood Junctions was happening, we had no interest in that because it was not in our wheelhouse. We just knew that there was a minors club. And Greg Lopez reached out to a friend of mine who's mentor, good person, big brother to me, Billy Vidal. And Billy Vidal was roommates with David Garcia, who was my DJ at the time. That was the partnership. I was the promoter. He was the DJ. And I remember Greg reached out to Billy saying, hey, there's an opportunity, and I know that your DJ is working with some promoter kid in San Jose, and we want to create a night. So I remember my Thursday night got shut down. I was pissed. And they said, we want to start a Thursday night at the Studio 47, or at the time it was Tropicana. And I'm like, well, what are we going to do? What do you guys want to? We had this meeting in the East Bay. We met. It was Greg Lopez, Billy Vidal, myself, and David Garcia. And Greg Lopez says, hey, I have the end with the owner of Hollywood Junction. I work for, I'm the resident DJ. I'm like, well, shit, what can you do? He goes, well, they want to try us out, and they want to give us a Thursday night. I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go again with these off nights. I'm like, I feel like my ego is, I'm this promoter. I'm making this money. I'm like, why can't we do Friday nights? Because they're doing Hollywood Junctions on Friday, and they want to give us Thursday. All right, let's go. And I remember we started the Fun House in 1996, 97. We started Thursday nights, the Fun House. And I remember our first night, we had 800 people in line. 800 people, and it sold out. We lasted 3 weeks on Thursday because then I still hadn't met you, Harry, at the time. I was dealing with Maziar at the time, who was the general manager of the venue. And Greg Lopez was, again, he was our mediator. So there was a buffer, and I didn't like that buffer. I couldn't meet the source, right? I wanted to meet the source because I felt that I deserved to meet who the boss is. And they're like, you can't meet the boss. I'm like, so they moved us. You strategically moved us from a Thursday night to Friday night, and the Fun House explodes. And that, to me, was the beginning of the journey of when I came on. That's a lot happened in 1990. In that time, I was my fourth year at San Jose State. I was going to graduate. I think what happened was that when they shut down Hamburger Mary's and I hit a roadblock, I lost my income from Thursday. I lost my income from Sunday. I felt like I was displaced. I was put into a position where I had to make a decision. And I knew that school was important, but school was not where I wanted to be. I was just going through the process of it. And it was also a place for me to live at the time because I didn't have anywhere else to live. I lived on campus. I ended up moving into my fraternity house at the time. And the Fun House then became like my lifeline. I was like, yes, I'm back in the scene. The only problem is that I'm not in control and I don't see the money like I was seeing it before. And I'm only getting paid $100 when I was making $1,000 to $1,500 a fucking weekend. And now I got some promoter or some DJ, Greg Lopez, giving me at the end of the night, hey, kid, thanks for your help. Here's $100. And I'd be at the end of the night, $100. What the fuck am I going to? I'm like, what am I going to do? I've been making more money, but goes in parallel to what you said, Harry. I stood quiet. I stayed quiet and I did my part. And I did my part until I got the opportunity one day. Your office secretary, I had to come in during the day, and your office secretary was in the office, and I got to meet her. Her name was Karina at the time, and this was Regina's. At the time, I didn't know who Regina was, and I found out that she was your daughter. So I walk in, and I'm here to get a payment, and they told me to go talk to Karina. My money was in an envelope, and I said, okay. So I sit down, I see, and all of a sudden, I sat down and started talking. I said, now I'm going to try to find my way. I want to meet the boss. And I couldn't meet the boss. And all of a sudden, the boss's daughter walks in. Regina walks in. And Regina walks in. And I'm looking. I'm like, who's this hot chick walking in right now? I didn't know. I was like, who's this hot chick with a... I mean, she walked in and I was like... And she smells so good. She smelled like money. And I was like, fuck, who is this chick? And I'm looking at Karina and, hey, Reg. And like, hey, Karina. And I'm looking. I'm like... Like this, now I'm thinking, this is where I want to be at. And so I then became friends with Karina. And I remember every time when they wanted to give me my money, I was like, no, don't worry about it. Just give it. I'll come back on Monday to collect it. And I remember that I would sit every Monday with Karina. And then one day it was just by timing that I met you when you came in. And Karina at the time was telling me, she goes, I'm going to be putting my 2-week notice and I'm going to be leaving because her father had just sold his company for, at the time, 1997, he had just sold his company for $40 million. So they were set. And she was in debt. She was going into her own ventures in San Francisco with her own stuff. And I remember I told her, I said, I want to do what you're doing. And I'm thinking, like, I'm a guy, and I'm thinking, like, you know, at the time, he's like, yeah. He goes, as long as you can do, you know, you can do. She was giving me that hope. And I'm like, I'm ready to do it. Not only can I be the promoter, but I'm willing to do it. I said, can you put in a good word for me? Please put in a good word. Like, I want to learn, because I wanted to learn the back end now. I was hungry. I was a sponge. I was you as now this young entrepreneur, because at the end of the day, it's the entrepreneurial spirit that was woken up in us. The fact that we also wanted more, the dream was bigger, was alive in us. I wanted to live in the big house. I wanted to drive the Ferrari. I wanted to drive. I wanted to live. I wanted to have the girls on one arm and on the other arm. And I wanted to have the fancy drinks. I mean, the illusion that I had created, the big dream, the vision, the glitz and the glamour that I had that I was manifesting was now coming to reality. And the minute that I was going to be given an opportunity or even a chance to even just sit down and meet the creator of the guy that was, again, it was this mystical, like, person. And I remember she put in a good word and she set up the introduction. And I remember when I met you and I